You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The San Francisco Giants got their business out of the way early last week at the winter meetings, and they signed Mark Melanson. They have a little bit left to do, but their team is pretty set, as it always seems to be every year. Let's talk to Chris Haft about that. I'm Allison Federer. Chris, it kind of went the way we thought it was going to, with Melanson going off the board first, and then Chapman, then Jansen. So he seemed pretty affordable, and I would imagine that the Giants were extremely happy with shoring up their bullpen like that.
Exactly, Allison. The Giants were extremely happy. They were happy to get such a quality guy who has so much endurance. I believe 71 games or more in, I think, four of the last 5 years or five of the previous six, something like that. Guy who has most saves in the major leagues, or ranks third in the major leagues, excuse me, in saves since 2013, behind Craig Kimbrell, and I wish I could remember the other one, but some top-notch guys. And he is a top-notch guy, at least the Giants think so. And they're going to lean he'll have to come through, because they're going to lean really heavily on him this season.
Yeah, it's. I was looking at, as we know, that the Giants are a profitable team. They fill that ballpark every night. They have a very good thing going out there in San Francisco. Everybody has their limitations, though, and it seems like their payroll is right up there at that ceiling. It's around $200 million. So if any other moves come down the pike, they're going to have to get a little creative, will they not?
You're absolutely right there again. Yes, they will just get creative. If they take on some salary, even if it's something that's relatively modest, like $3 to $5 million a year, or for 1 year, they'll have to get rid of $3 to $5 million, because they're going to be over the competitive balance tax threshold, and they don't want to have to take too much of a penalty. But it's funny. I've seen it happen a few times, Allison, where some deals can get made late in spring training, or late in the off season, right before spring training. I was covering the Cincinnati Reds in 1999 when they dealt with Greg Vaughn, who had hit 52 home runs the year before, right before 50 or 52, I forget which, but that's not the point. The fact point is they got a big time slugger right before spring training was to start, and he ended up hitting 45 home runs that year and ended up helping them. So who knows? The Giants might be able to get somebody like that, and if they can make the finances work, it'll be quite a coup.
Yeah, they're definitely still on the hunt for an outfielder, a left fielder. You think that they'll be able to find somebody to fill that void?
I really think they can. Bobby Evans, the general manager, is talking about using Jarrett Parker, a left-hand hitter, and or Mac Williamson, a right-hand hitter, either with either one winning the job or in left field or platooning, which they could do with one being a right-handed swinger and the other being a left. But with the pitching staff they've assembled, they need to try and go for it this year. Need to try and go for it all, and I don't know if that's going to work with. Going forward, all I don't know if that's going to work with two near rookies, sharing or left field, or with one of them in left field. So I can see them doing something late in spring training, or late in the off season again. I'm sorry.
You're already talking about spring training, Chris. You're so dedicated. I'm not quite there yet. And just to conclude on a very sad note, but you attended a memorial service of Andres Torres, who most recently played for the Giants in 2013. He lost his wife to cancer. Such a sad story. Andres is only around 38 years old, so young family. But you went to the memorial. A lot of Giants personnel were there, so kind of rallying around this very popular player.
Yeah, it was great to see the organization rally around in Andres in this manner. This president and CEO, Larry Baer, was there. The head baseball operations honcho, Brian Sabian, was there. Bruce Bochy, I'm sure, would have been there, but he was out of the country performing a charity function. And among the players, Matt Cain was there with his wife, Chelsea. So all in all, a lot of people from Giants turning out to try and, fuck up Andres in this, unspeakably difficult time for him.
Yeah, and he had actually spoken a few words and tried to sort of be positive about things. I'm sure they have young kids, so how is he doing?
Yeah, ages 4 and 1. Andres has made it's public knowledge. He has ADHD, so he needs to Andres needs to take care of himself. And
wow.
While he's taking care of his kids, yeah. So it's going to be an uphill battle for him. But I'm sure that if he needed some help in any way, the Giants would help him. I think they proved that today just by, turning out, for him, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, we will hope for the best for his family and for him. And I'm glad that you were there. So thank you. Thank you for your time, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Allison.
The Diamondbacks were able to accomplish a couple of things during their time at the winter meetings, and now we will see how they fill out the rest of their roster as the months continue in the offseason. Let's talk to Steve Gilbert about all of that. I'm Allison Futter. Steve, so they were able to accomplish a couple of things. They signed Fernando Rodney to a one-year contract. So that, tell me what that does for the look of the bullpen and what he adds to all of this.
Well, I think, Allison, what it does is it allows them to kind of push some of the younger relievers and that they have a little earlier in the game, so they don't have to pitch some of the ninth inning necessarily, which can be a challenge for young players, as we all know. So I think what it does is it allows some of the younger guys, Jake Barrett, Enrique Burgos, and people like that, to not necessarily face as much pressure as they might have had the Diamondbacks not acquired somebody to close out games. So I think at least for 1 year, the 1 year they have them under contract, it gives them a chance to continue to try to break these other guys in less pressurized situations.
So you have mentioned in your coverage that there is still a need for more bullpen depth. So and you said that the Diamondbacks sort of feel like they got a feel for the market after the winter meeting. So you wouldn't be surprised if there were more relief pitcher signings?
Yeah, I think that they're going to continue to try to add arms to the bullpen. Fernando Rodney was somebody that they identified who was within their price range for what they were looking for. Certainly they weren't going to play at the top of the market for some of the other guys like, Chapman or Jansen. But one of the things, and it was kind of interesting, on a conference call that GM Mike Hazen said it's possible that the other bullpen signings that they make, those players could make more money than guaranteed money than Fernando Rodney did with his $2.75 million. So that was somewhat interesting. It makes you wonder kind of who they're looking at or what else might be out there for them in terms of adding some arms to the bullpen.
So they're kind of starting over. Obviously, they made a lot of changes in the front office. And when it comes to Hazen, just his over – I mean, they want to be competitive. Obviously, they thought that they – a year ago, they had a much different opinion about maybe where their team is. And getting Taijuan Walker, I mean, it seems like they could possibly put together a pretty nice season, even though I'm sure that they're not done constructing the roster. But they have made some positive moves in some key positions. How do you sort of see things like right as they are right now?
You know, that's also interesting because one of the things Mike Hazen was saying is that, the deeper he dove into kind of the roster and listening to people that were, with the organization last year and scouts and whatnot, he started to feel better about the team and kind of the talent that was here. And he said, I know that, there was a lot of optimism last year, but now looking at it, you can see why there was some optimism. Now, it didn't go the way they wanted it to, but he felt like he could see why there was so much optimism and that there is a lot of talent, especially in the everyday roster. And now they're starting to develop some pitching depth. And if some of these young pitchers could take a step forward, that definitely would make them a competitive team. Now, again, they're not going all in with, another huge Zach Greinke type signing. So it doesn't mean that, but it does mean that, when he started to take a look at it, he realized that there is a little bit more talent here than maybe they had thought.
Yeah, where are they on Jake Lamb? It seems that they're ready for him to be really playing on a regular basis at third base, even though he didn't get a lot of playing time against left-handers last year. So how do you think that's going to play?
Yeah, they want to see him take that next step, and so they're going to play him. It sounds like they want him every day to play. And, you know, they allow him some struggles against lefties if that's what it takes, because they believe that he will hit lefties and that he is a guy that should play every day. So they're going to give him every opportunity to play every day, and they see him as a guy that will eventually be able to hit left-handed pitching.
And the ever-evolving conversation about Shelby Miller, who I never lost confidence in him last year, even when he was terrible. But they're really – that could be, again, the sort of X factor in how this next season goes. Do you think that – there was so much talk about, like, he had put so much pressure on himself because of the components that were in the trade that they had made to get him. Do you think that – he's in a better place now? Do you think that a fresh start next season will work in his favor?
I think that's true. I just think he's too good a pitcher to have had the kind of season he had last year. And Torrey Lovello says the new manager says he's talked to him, and that Shelby feels good, that he physically feels good, mentally feels good, and he's looking forward to, you know, getting back after it this year. So it will definitely be interesting if he takes a step forward or becomes the pitcher that they thought they were getting or even close to it, and Greinke's back to health. I mean, so you can start to then put together some optimistic scenarios. But certainly he's a big part of that and would really help out that rotation.
So now that you spend some time with Torrey Lovello at the winter meetings, you've gotten to know him a little bit. What are your impressions of him? What kind of personality does he have for the people that have not really heard much from him? What kind of guy is he?
I think you start to see, you know, everybody you talk to about him talked about what a great personality he has, what a good person he is, and you just start to get that feel for him. You can see where he would be a guy that guys will be able to relate to in the clubhouse. He seems like he's a very good communicator, has a good sense of humor. Certainly knowledgeable about the game of baseball. I think he's a guy that you can now kind of understand why he had success that second half of the year with Boston when he filled in for John Farrell. Just a guy that looks like he's ready to manage.
He seemed really comfortable, like, just being around people at the media availabilities. He seemed to be pretty much enjoying himself and comfortable in that role. It's clear that he's got the right personality, I guess, on that side of it, which doesn't mean anything in the wins and losses, but there is another side to managing, which is, like, you know, dealing with media and being, you know, a public speaker in a sense, and he seems to be pretty good at that.
He does, and he seems to be very honest and open, and he seems to be a guy and that's important when you're talking with guys in the clubhouse. If he's able to communicate with them, that's a big, big deal over the course of a long season. And that probably these days is more important for a manager than necessarily the X's and O's or the strategy standpoint of things. So certainly you can understand why people have been so impressed and why people have expected him to have a manager's job here for the last several years.
And the last question I have is Dan Heron. That's cool. So he's coming back as a pitching strategist, and I hope that doesn't mean that he's going to cut down on his tweeting because he is so entertaining. Tell us about what his position is going to be.
Well, he's going to be kind of a bridge in certain respects for, you know, the analytics and some of the things they do in the front office down to the field. You know, a pitching coach like Mike Butcher has so many things to be focused on over the course of a season. He's got a full staff of pitchers he's trying to build relationships with and work on mechanics with and game plan with, that it's hard then for a pitching coach to be super responsive or to be able to process all the information that some of these front offices now provide. So Dan's going to be kind of responsible for, you know, disseminating that in ways that are easily digestible down in the clubhouse. So as far as his tweeting goes, which we did ask what was going to happen to his tweeting, and Hazen said that was still a matter of negotiation. He said it with a smile. He said it's still a matter of negotiation. between he and Dan, and that, you know, he certainly appreciated Heron's wit, but that that was a work in progress and a discussion to be had. But, you know, and again, of course, in typical Dan Heron fashion, he tweeted out that part of his new job responsibilities was going to be to teach young pitchers how to tweet. So that could be fun
to watch. He's very self-deprecating, which is the best part of it. He makes fun of himself more than anybody else.
Yes, he does. And he also got in a few good shots at a former Diamondback, Curt Schilling. So certainly kept people entertained.
Yeah, he's like the Bob Uecker of our generation. He just he makes fun of himself. But okay, well, good. I'm happy for him. So, okay, Steve, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you soon.
My pleasure, Allison.
The Padres left the winter meetings a week ago looking for a little bit more to add to their roster, but they certainly had an interesting Rule 5 draft. So let's talk about all of that with A.J. Cassavell. I'm Allison Sutter. A.J., normally the Rule 5 draft is a little bit of a footnote for a lot of people that are just following their favorite teams, but Padres were obviously extremely active there. So what did you glean from everything when it was over as far as who they received?
Yeah, A.J. Preller seems to love the Rule 5 draft. I mean, that was the most exciting thing that happened with the Padres at the winter meetings, and last year it was one of the more exciting things, too, when they took four guys. So I think what I gleaned from it is they took three guys. They took each of the top three picks. They wound up trading with the Reds and with Minnesota to get the top three picks. They already had the third pick. The first guy they took, Miguel Diaz, is kind of fits the same Luis Perdomo mold, a guy who they view as a starter down the road, but who they could kind of hide in the bullpen. Now, obviously, last year Perdomo ended up in the starting rotation through necessity. But if they want to, I think they feel pretty confident they can kind of sneak him by in the bullpen as one of the seventh or eighth relievers. The second pick, Luis Torrens, the catcher from the Yankees, was the one that really kind of surprised me with the trade the Padres made. They essentially gave up Josh Van Meter, who might project as a backup kind of infielder down the road. So they gave up a prospect with some major league potential. He's not a top 30 guy, but he's right on the fringe, just to acquire the Reds pick. When what that means is if Luis Torrens, this catcher, doesn't remain on the roster for the duration of the season, the Padres lose Josh Van Meter for essentially nothing. So that's the one where it seems to me now the Padres have Austin Hedges as their starting catcher. The Padres have Christian Bethencourt as kind of their backup catcher who can also play outfield, and they're obviously kind of hoping he can maybe pitch, he can maybe make that transition. That tells me that they're probably going to enter the season with three catchers on the roster, and maybe hope that Torrens can sustain for an entire major league season. It sounds like, based on what they gave up, it sounds like they're pretty confident. And then the last guy, Alan Cordoba, the number three pick, shortstop, kind of, that to me seems, they're looking for another shortstop on the roster. From what I'm hearing, it sounds like he might be the toughest guy to maintain on the roster for the entire season.
It's interesting. In the years that I've covered a team, like just with Rule 5 guys at spring training, I remember the Astros picked someone. I don't remember his name. And then he went to spring training. He was a catcher, and he basically could not throw to second base. Clearly he didn't make the team. They're going to figure out a lot at spring training. And so you really don't really – I mean, obviously they scouted these guys and they've seen them play, but you really don't ultimately know – especially with a catcher, what you're really going to get until he gets out there and he really starts just getting into games and showing what he can do. So there is a huge risk with that.
Oh, yeah. And I think another big part of it is that whoever doesn't make the roster, they're going to kind of have to explain, especially if it's a Luis Torrens or if it's a Diaz, they're going to kind of have to explain why they gave up so much for those two guys, and
right.
We don't know what we're going to get from them. And Luis Perdomo in spring training last year looked flat out abysmal. I didn't think he belonged on the roster, and I was proven wrong very quickly. So I think if you look at Luis Torrens, he has never had more than 227 at bats. He had a shoulder issue a couple seasons ago that kind of lingered on into last year. He's not going to get the chance to develop at the major league level because he's frankly not ready, and they're banking on him for the future. So what does it do to kind of stunt their development? And are these guys ready for the pressures of playing in the major leagues? That's I think the biggest question.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a transitional year for the Padres, and just it's going to be fascinating to watch how everything kind of unfolds. I'm looking through your sort of winter meetings wrap-up on the Padres website, and certainly unfinished business is the rotation competition, which is, I mean, it's unfinished businesses, but it's sort of, I mean, it's, you know, do you see it really changing that much between now and reporting to spring training? It's just going to be like this wide open competition with guys that are already sort of in the mix.
I think it'll change a lot in the sense that they just need to bring guys on board. I don't know if it'll change. The five guys they have right now could end up being the five starting pitchers, but they need at least some depth or some sort of competition, because they don't know what they're going to get out of Cesar Vargas, who missed the second half of last season with elbow trouble. Jared Cosart's coming off elbow surgery. He's supposed to be fine by the start of spring training. And Paul Clemens is the other guy. Those three guys are all kind of pretty serious question marks going into the season. So they want to sign three guys to at least compete with those three. And if they win a rotation spot, so be it. But they just need to add depth, because pitchers get hurt. That's just the way things work. They already have Colin Ray and Robbie Erlin out for the season. So they need to add at least three major league caliber arms. Like kind of, and if you look at what they did last season with the Clayton Richard and Christian Friedrich, guys that they kind of pulled off the scrap heap and ended up having an impact for the Padres in 2016.
Yeah, so that could be a matter of just like waiting it out to see who's still unsigned, maybe after the first of the year. And, I mean, you hate to refer to any humans as like, you know, scrap heap, but that is kind of how we refer to it in baseball. So, I mean, it would be a lot of guys that would normally get like spring training invites in any other situation, and that might be the case here, but they might be able to squeeze a little more out of the Padres just out of necessity alone.
And a couple other names to keep an eye on are Tinelson, Labette, and Walker Lockett, who are prospects who made the jump from single A to triple A last season, who are going to get a look in spring training. And if either of them impresses, it wouldn't shock me. I don't foresee it, but it wouldn't shock me to see them maybe win the number five starter job.
Wow. Okay, interesting stuff. AJ, thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll catch up with you either next week or after the holidays. We'll have to see. Thanks a lot.
All right, thanks for having me on.
The Colorado Rockies are intent on being contenders in 2017. No matter what anybody says, they have acquired a couple of really key players. Let's talk to Thomas Harding about that. I am Allison Sutter. Thomas, I want to start with Ian Desmond, because that was the first thing that happened at the winter meetings. The news broke that they had signed him for 5 years, $70 million. Eye-popping numbers, along with the notion that he's going to move to first base. So now that you have this to settle in and unjumble it in your mind, what do you think about that whole deal?
You know, he's a good guy to have. When I look at that contract, it's a 5-year deal, and they do have a first baseman coming up in Ryan McMahon. So it's quite possible that by the end of this deal, Ian Desmond is starting most of the time, playing a whole lot of different positions, so kind of like a Ben Zobrist for the Cubs. So while first base is a bit eye-popping, and right now he is their guy, I don't know that he'll be a first baseman forever, but it was more important to get Ian Desmond in than to get him in at a certain position and start moving people around just yet. Desmond is a good offensive player. He does go through some serious slumps and some serious hot streaks. But what people like about him is he has won. I think he's been on a division champion 3 of his last 5 years. And the Rockies, with only 2 guys who've ever been to a playoff game, that would be, I'm sorry, 2 position players, that would be Carlos Gonzalez and Gerardo Parra. I think they need that type of player, and you're willing to do something a little bit out of the box to get him on your team.
Yeah, well, that definitely is out of the box. They seem to have focused on several areas, though. They signed left-handed reliever Mike Dunn to a 3-year contract worth $19 million. That is a lot of money for a reliever, probably not so much these days, but that really shores up a bullpen that needed a lot of help. And is he the new closer?
That's a good question. I mean, it's certainly a closer-type contract. However, I'm not sure that Adam Ottavino isn't their closer. And there are 2 things at work here. They did need some bullpen help because it was the worst bullpen in baseball last year. But then when you look at what they have and what some of those guys went through last year, and I'm talking specifically Ottavino, who came off of Tommy John surgery and didn't pitch, I believe, until July, and Jake McGee, who had a knee injury all year. What happens if those two guys are healthy this year? Then it's the bullpen that, while it needed help, it didn't need a complete overhaul. Mike Dunn comes in. He has the ability to strike a hitter out. And whether you're using him in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning, those are important innings at Coors Field. So he's an important addition. I would not be surprised if they spent some money on one more reliever. I mean, that would seem to be a bit of an overhaul, but don't forget, behind this group of veteran types, they have a lot of young arms, some of them who pitched last season, that you expect them to become better at the big league level. So the bullpen, it was an area they needed to beef up. They could beef it up some more, but it looks like signing Mike Dunn was a big part of that.
Yeah, I guess anywhere these days, and it's really been a trend that's just in the last couple of years, at the most. But really, when you see like a number like 3 years, $19 million for a reliever, then clearly, there was a point where everyone just assumed he was a closer. The trend is now moving toward putting your best reliever in the best situation, regardless of when that was. I think we saw in the postseason last year that was validated time and again. And so I would think that the next step is for the players, for the pitchers themselves, to really buy into that and not worry so much about their role, and just be happy when they are put in a crucial situation, no matter what inning it is.
Well, I'll tell you, the Rockies were working toward that in the past, when all these guys that they have, now granted they were earlier in their careers, but everybody in their bullpen up until Mike Dunn did not have a games finished clause in their contract. So It wasn't like they would lose money not being used in the ninth inning. Now, they brought Dunn in. No one promised him the closer role, but, that certainly could work to his advantage, getting it if he pitches well enough. When I look at how a bullpen is used in the regular season than it is in the postseason, so I'm not so sure that we're going to get to this, you use your best reliever whenever the situation comes up, and especially at Coors Field. You could burn your best reliever in the seventh inning, and something absolutely crazy could happen in the eighth inning, and then what are you looking at in the ninth? So what you've got to have are just as many back-of-the-bullpen arms as you possibly can, and that's what the Rockies are working on. I don't see the playoffs as changing the way relief pitchers are used completely. Now, there may be some guys that you can float around in the game, but what you have to have is what the Indians had, especially, was they had a guy, Allen was their closer, but they were able to get Andrew Miller and float him around. He really is a closer, but you're able to float him. So what you really need to have is more than one closer or more than one guy that can get the last outs of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they seem to be going in the right direction, at least. And now we're going to turn to a totally different topic. This, I think, came as a surprise to everybody. Chad Bettis announced that he had surgery for testicular cancer. So I'm sure that took you off guard, too. What was your reaction to that, and can you fill us in on how he's doing?
Well, let's face it. There is never a time that something like that happens. You say, oh, yeah, I saw that coming. You know, that's the,
right.
It's a health scare, but and I'll be talking further at length with Chad Bettis. We've had a couple communications at this point. What I like about Chad Bettis as a pitcher is that he is so studious. I'm not doing as well in the last 15 pitches of the game, so I need to do this, this, this. And when I talk to Jeff Breidich just sort of smiled like, yeah, it's not like we have to call Chad in and tell him what to do. And I noticed the statement that he sent out in the announcement where, after this happened, he actually researched the incidence of people in his age group, you know, the 20 to 40 age group, really, that had this. And he went and encouraged people to get checked, take your health seriously. And I expect Chad to be that guy, that he's going to be out there discussing it, simply because that's the way he operates. He operates in a very thoughtful manner. If something isn't right, like something with his health, he's like, hey, let's do something about this, and let's make sure that others don't go down the same path, or others don't miss it, because he was able to catch it.
Okay, well, we will hope for the best for him. And Thomas, thank you so much. Happy holidays to you. We will catch up with you probably after the new year.
All right, you have a wonderful holiday. And who knows, there may be more to talk about with the Rockies. They certainly are doing a lot.
Absolutely, and it's fun to see. Thank you. The Dodgers seem to have obtained every name on their wish list as they go into the 2017 season. attempting to win another division title. Let's talk to Ken Gernick about that. I'm Allison Sutter. Ken, this was a really busy week, and of course there are still physicals pending, but it looks like they are retaining the services of Kenley Jansen and Justin Turner. Let's start with Jansen. What do you know about his deal? It seems to be pretty extensive, and also there seems to be an opt-out. So what can you tell us about that?
Right. It looks like it was sort of copied from Chapman's deal. He's got a three-year opt-out. It's 5 years, $80 million compared to 86 for Chapman. And, you know, it keeps him in L.A., even though a lot of people thought he was going to just go for the highest bidder. He actually had more money from Miami and Washington. But his agent said that his comfort level in L.A. played a role. And of course, the Dodgers did step up 5 years for a reliever. It's not something that anybody really expected from Andrew Friedman. That's just not the way the Dodgers have handled things in the last 2 years with him, and the way he did things in Tampa Bay was not to tie up a lot of money in closers. But, you know, this is a different team. This is a win-now team, and they've been so close for the last 4 years without busting through. So it seems like their goal here was to keep together a very good team that just finished 2 wins shy of the World Series. And that's what they've done by bringing back not only Jansen, but Justin Turner at third base and Rich Hill in their starting rotation.
Yeah, Jansen, the word had come out pretty quickly that he did turn down more money. I think it was from the Nationals. And then there were a lot of people that were piping in with their, oh, that's probably just the deferred money and that's probably more value. But it does seem like legitimately like that he really wanted to stay in L.A. And it's really, I like it when this happens. It's really unique. It doesn't happen that often. There's a lot of pressure from agents and the Players Association to take that highest dollar. He never tipped his hand. It seemed like, just from the coverage that I was reading, that he did ultimately, you know, want to stay in L.A. because that, of course, is not a good negotiating tool. Did that surprise you at all? Just you have covered him for a long time. When you did realize that this was for less money than he had been offered?
Well, I think what really changed the dynamic of the invasion was Melanson going to the Giants. I think Jansen's camp was hoping to get the Dodgers and Giants in a bidding war, and that didn't materialize when the Giants grabbed Melanson and they were off the board. So that left Jansen with two choices, and besides the Dodgers, with Miami, you know, having a longer way to go to get into contention for a World Series. And the Nationals are pretty good right now, so they were viable. So, and then so it became kind of, I think, a coin toss for him. And I think at that point, you know, I mean, when we're talking about up at the $80 to $85 million range, you know, a few million dollars, we're not talking about another $20, $30, $40 million. It was a relatively small amount when you're a ball player considering those type of contracts. So then comfort level can come into play. And without the Giants really there to totally bid things up, you know, as the rival for the Dodgers, I think it probably became an easier decision for Jansen to take a little less money and go back to the team that he knows. He knows the players. He knows the management. He's comfortable in the city, and he's become quite popular. So, you know, I'm guessing that at the end it probably wasn't that tough a call for him.
No, and it's nice to see that, because even if it's just a few million, sometimes that often makes a difference when a player is choosing his destination. I don't know, Robinson Cano kind of comes to mind, but that's good to see. So on the flip side, Justin Turner, it sounded like he always made it known that he really wanted to return to the Dodgers from that area. And also it seems like the Dodgers really should be credited, of course, with like helping him resurrect his career. And it sounds like there was a lot of loyalty there where he really, beyond a comfort level, but really just feels so strongly about the organization that he wanted to stay. Do you think that factored into it?
Yeah, I think it was a big factor, you know, and a little factor, or maybe more than a little factor, was the fact that he didn't really have a big market out there clamoring for him. You know, unlike Jansen with the elevation of the importance of the closer, you know, everybody wants a closer, and Jansen proved himself to be as good as any of them. You know, Turner has had a breakthrough season here, you know, in 27 home runs, and he's had a great year. He's had a really solid two-plus years with the Dodgers, really 3 years with the Dodgers, and this one break through. But, you know, he didn't have a lot of teams needing a third baseman that were willing to pay, so I don't know that he was really able to get into a bidding war. So I think the fact that he didn't want to leave, you know, coupled with the fact that there, you know, there really wasn't a clamoring for him, it just made it a logical choice. And they paid him, you know, good money. I mean, this is a big payday for him at his age. And, you know, I'm sure he's happy to be home, you know, with family and friends. So, you know, it worked out. They were always favored to keep him. And that one worked out. I think the only real surprise was that they really had been able to keep all three of their big free agents. And, you know, there was a lot of indications that they didn't want to spend that kind of money. They spent almost $200 million to re-sign the three of them. But, you know, they learned last year when Greinke left, you know, don't, you know, you really better be careful about letting your best free agents leave. So they were able to keep three for less than the amount that Greinke signed to leave and go to Arizona.
Yeah, it's definitely not like anybody was making a lot of sacrifices. Like you said, that is so much money to spend. Kind of looking at the roster now, I know there's still a lot of time in the offseason. I know there's some holes that the Dodgers would still like to fill. But, I mean, if they were done right now, it still looks like a pretty good team. Do you think that there's anything huge that they still have to address?
Yeah, they do want a second baseman. They really have a hole there, and they prefer a right-handed hitter because they wanted to add a right-handed hitter anyway because of their troubles against left-handed starting pitching. So that was another reason why bringing back Turner was so important. But they really that just gets them back to even, really. They need to add another bat, another right-handed bat. So, you know, that's why there's persistent rumors that they're going to trade for Brian Dozier with the Twins, but it's pretty clear that those two teams are apart on what his value is going back in return. And I would imagine for 42 home run second baseman, the Twins want the Dodgers' best prospect and more. Their best prospect is Cody Bellinger, and they don't want to trade him. So I think there's going to be a little bit of a dance during the remaining weeks of the winter. And at some point, they're going to probably get a right-handed bat to play second base.
Right. Okay. All right. Good stuff. Ken, thanks for your time. And we'll catch up with you soon. Thank you.
Thanks, Allison.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.